Oh, good to see everybody. Okay, and the internet is working so far. Just pray that everything remains stable in this material world. Okay, this material world is extremely unstable, and I'm not just talking about the internet. Whew. Can't believe about this material world. Whew. Every day there's shocks. Anyway, so make sure the microphone's there, original sound is there, participants get muted, and then we'll chant our Radhamadava. And today we're going to go back to nectar devotion. All right, let's start. Jaya Radhamadhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Nabalaba. Gopi Janabalaba Giribadadhahuti Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Gopi Janabalaba Giribada Dhahode Gopi Janabalaba Giribada Dhahode Yashoda Nandana Muraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Muraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jayam Vishnupad Padamahansa Paravidakacharya All Siltera Sitashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chadanana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Gijai Iskana Srila Prabhupada Gijai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Gijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Gijai Param Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Gadadha Srila Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kun Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Gijai Vrindavanam ki jai, Mathuram ki jai, Jagannathaswami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Srimati Lasi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Prananda, Hari 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 Go. All right, let me just make sure we're not going to get interrupted during this class. Momentito. Okay. So, Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Udle Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschachate Chitarni. So, Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Maha I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my divine spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who has so kindly saved me from the greatest ignorance, nescience, and he's enlightened me with the torchlight of knowledge. Okay, Prabhupada, good job. So now we'll go to the nectar of devotion, and first we'll chant the prayer, or one prayer, to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. As you remember, Nana Shastra, Kicharanaika Nipano, Sadharma Samstapako, Lokanam Hitakarano, Tri Bhuvane Mantyo, Shatanya Kadho, Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Pashana, Nandena Mataliko, Vande Rupa Sanatano, Raghu Yugo, Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter because they are absorbed in the Buddha of the Gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So today we're continuing our discussion of fraternal loving affairs from the Nectar Devotion. So let's share a little bit. Chapter entitled Fraternal Loving Devotion. Fraternal. Like friendship. All right. Let's see. All right, I think we're ready. An example of helplessness is described in the following statement. Due to Krishna's departure, just send a message to tell everybody. Classes online. If you want to get more people, 1 second. Class now. Now. Okay, got it. An example of helplessness is described in the following statement. Due to Krishna's departure from Vrindavan and Mathura, Krishna's dearest coward boys felt as mentally light as possible. They were like fragments of cotton lighter than the air and were all floating in the air without any shelter. In other words, the minds, that means they were dizzy, the minds of the coward boys became almost vacant on account of Krishna's separation. An example of impatience was also shown by the coward boys when Krishna went to Mathura. Out of the sorrow of separation, all these boys forgot to take care of their cow herding and tried to forget all the melodious songs they used to sing in the pasturing ground. At last, they had no desire to live anymore, being separated from Krishna. An example of stillness was described by a friend of Krishna's who informed him in Mathura that all the coward boys had become just like leafless trees on the tops of the hills. They appeared almost naked, being skinny and frail, and did not carry any fruits or flowers. He informed Krishna that all the coward boys residing in Vrindavana were as still as the trees at the tops of hills. Sometimes they felt diseased from their separation from Krishna and being so greatly disappointed. They were aimlessly wandering on the banks of the Yamuna. There's also an example of madness caused by separation from Krishna. When Krishna was absent from Vrindavana, all the coward boys became bewildered, and having given up all kinds of activities, they appeared to be mad and forgot all their regular business. They were sometimes lying down on the ground, sometimes rolling in the dust, sometimes laughing, and sometimes running very swiftly. All of these symptoms gave them the appearance of madmen. One friend of Krishna's criticized him by saying, "My dear Lord, you become the king of Mathura after killing Kamsa. And that is very good news for us, but at Vrindavan, all the residents have become blind from their continuous crying over your absence. They are full only of anxieties and are not cheered at all by your becoming the king of Mathura. Sometimes there are also signs of death. Of course, those of you who don't know that at the age of 16, Krishna went to Mathura and he left Vrindavan. Sometimes there are also signs of death caused by separation from Krishna. Of course, these are all Vyavachari Bhavas. Once Krishna was told, my dear enemy of Kamsa, because of their separation from you, the coward boys are suffering too much, and they are now lying down in the valleys, breathing only slightly. In order to sympathize with the boys' regrettable condition, even the forest friends, the deer, are shedding tears. In the Mathura Kanda chapter of the Skanda Purana, there is a description of Krishna and Balaram surrounded by all the coward boys always engaged in taking care of the cows and calves. When Krishna was met by Arjuna at a potter shop in the city of Drupadanagara, because of the similarity of their bodily features, they made intimate friendship. This is an instance of friendship caused by the attraction of similar bodies. Of course, we know generally that's called Sarupya Siddhi, where one gets perfection by having a form like that of the Lord. In the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 71st chapter, verse 27, it is stated that when Krishna arrived in the city of Indraprastha, Bhima was so overwhelmed with joy that with tears in his eyes and a smiling face, he immediately embraced his maternal cousin. Following him were his young brothers, Nakula and Sahadev, along with Arjuna. And they all became so overwhelmed at seeing Krishna that with full satisfaction, they embraced the Lord, who was known as Achyuta, the infallible. There's a similar statement about the coward boys of Vrindavana. When Krishna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all the coward boys came to see him wearing jeweled earrings in their ears. Becoming so greatly overjoyed, they extended their arms and embraced instances of full satisfaction in friendship. This was the time during the eclipse when the residents of Vrindavan, after so many years, went to Kurukshetra to see Krishna, and they were feeling so much separation. Of course, the Rath Yatra is held in memory of that particular occasion. In the 10th canto, 12th chapter, verse 12 of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that even after undergoing severe penances and austerities and performing the yogic principles, the great mystic yogis can hardly become eligible to achieve the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna. But the same personality of Godhead is easily available to the vision of the residents of Vrindavana. This means there is no comparison to the great fortune of these devotees. The friendly relationship of the coward boys with Krishna is a particular type of spiritual ecstasy almost similar to the ecstasy of conjugal love. This ecstasy of loving affairs between the coward boys and Krishna is very difficult to explain. Great expert devotees like Rupa Goswami express their astonishment at the inconceivable feelings which are in Krishna and his coward boyfriends. This particular type of ecstatic love shared between Krishna and his confidential friends further develops into parental love, and from there, it may develop into conjugal love, the most exalted humor or mellow of ecstatic love between Lord Krishna and his devotees. So Prabhupada here is indicating that there is some hierarchical development. So in other words, one can pass through the different humors, different rasas, on the way to conjugal rasa, or on the way to parenthood, or on the way even to servitude, or on the way to friendship. So now we're going to read about the parental relationship in chapter 43 of the Nectar of Devotion. So, parenthood. When ecstatic love develops into the relationship of parenthood and becomes steadily established, the relationship is called Vatsalya Ras. The exhibition of this Vatsalya Ras, standard of devotional service, can be found in the dealings of Krishna with his devotees who represent themselves as superior personalities like father, mother, teacher. So let me digress a little bit from this. Prabhupada would often talk about how in practically every other religion, God is seen as what? The Father, like you hear. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, on earth as it is in heaven. And in one sense, this is not wrong, it's actually right. Krishna in the Gita makes this statement too. He says, I'm everybody's father. Aham Vija Pradapipa Vitaha. Which means basically, I'm the seed giving father of everyone. And he's the source of everything. Aham Sarva Shaparo Matak Sarvam Pravartate Iti Vatva Pajantivam Buddha Bhava Samandata. That, of course, in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 8, that Krishna says, I'm the source of everything. So he's dad. God is father. That's true. Now, that's an ontological description. That's a big word, ontological. Ontological means basically his identity, philosophical identity, his real identity. However, Krishna's real identity becomes covered for his pure devotees by the influence of Yogavaya. And the reason for that is severalfold. One is they want to have an intimate relationship with him. Like if you're in the mood of on reverence, and certainly in polite culture, you are reverent towards your father, especially if he's paying the bills. And Krishna is paying all the bills. Everything comes from Krishna. Right? We hear that in the Upanishad. Om Purnamadam. Everything is coming from Krishna. So many complete manifestations come from Krishna. And they're all complete in themselves, and Krishna remains the complete whole. Wow. So he's worthy of reverence. He's worthy of obedience. He's worthy of respect. That's the nature of God. So to have an intimate relationship, one has to forget his ontological nature. One has to forget that he's God. One has to forget that he's all-powerful. One has to forget that he knows everything. Phew! In other words, you have to think of him in almost an ordinary sense to have an intimate relationship. So that's one reason why devotees forget, and they forget under the influence of what people who are not Krishna conscious forget. Oh, Maya. But that's because they're envious of him. So both devotees and rascals, devotees and rascals, both forget that Krishna is God. It's interesting. Very, very interesting. But devotees for the purpose of serving and intimacy. Now, there's another reason why they forget that Krishna is God, so that they can serve God in a mood considering that God needs them. So in friendship, the friends of Krishna are thinking, you know, Krishna needs our help, pasturing the cows or whatever. In a parental relationship, certainly the parents of Krishna think Krishna needs us. And the gopis are thinking Krishna is dependent on our love. He's dependent. Emotionally, at least, on our love. So, in other words, service reaches its peak, its maximum, when Krishna becomes the object of service rather than the supplier and the server of the individual soul. In other words, most religions and even basically materialistic Vaishnavism or materialistic worship of God in India or as Krishna, they consider God to be the order supplier. Prabhupada would sometimes comment about this statement, give us this day, daily bread, as indicating that people wanted to turn God into their order supplier, and actually even more humorously, Prabhupada would say they want to turn God into a baker. I mean, that's humorous, of course. Or people pray to God to become relieved from sins, or people pray to God for wealth. In India, of course, you have these different ceremonies, Satyanarayan Katha. And in Satyanarayan Katha, you tell a lot of different stories about how people worshipped God, Narayan, Krishna, and they got so much in return. They like especially the story of Sudama Brahman, which we've told before. Sudama Brahman just offered Krishna some broken rice that was useless for all intents and purposes, and Krishna accepted it, and then Sudama Brahman went back, and he found a mansion with many servants in the house and many cars in the garage. Of course, the word cars, that's something I made up. It's a chariot in the garage. So people become very enthused because they want God to serve them. That's really the point. Or in certain religions, they think that their guru or the son of God died for their sins. I mean, that's really not so kosher. Sorry about that. It gives away something else. But anyway, that's not nice. Can you imagine in the Krishna conscious movement if we said, except Prabhupada, he's suffering for your sins. He died for your sins. Ooh. I mean, that is so, I can't even think of a word. It is so horrible to think like that. You know, the Prabhupada suffering. You know, we see pictures of Prabhupada. Of course, there's no suffering because Prabhupada is transcendental. But we see Prabhupada undergoing so many difficulties in the final stages of his pastimes. And we start to think, it's because of us, and now I can do any damn thing I want because Prabhupada took my sins away. My Guru Maharaj took my sins away, and I can do anything. Hoodie ball. Well, it's not like that. Because if one tries to commit sins on the strength of chanting or on the strength of surrendering to one's Guru, Krishna, Radha, whatever, it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. You may be relieved from your sins by the mercy of some great soul or by Krishna, but if you keep on sinning, you will not be relieved of your sins. You're going to compound your sins. Try to remember that. So, anyway, so most people approach God for their own purposes. You know, God the Father, God the supplier, God the big boss who's going to pay me a salary. I've done so much for you, God, and why haven't you given to me? So the higher principle, of course, that's better than nothing. But the higher principle is to be the servant of God, where God takes the position of being the son. Like in the parental relationship, God is the son. And he says to his parents or to those in that particular relationship, you know, aunts, uncles, all of it, village people with the same relationship, he says, I'm hungry. Right? Instead of saying, dear God, give us this day our daily bread. God, my daily chapati. This daily pakora. The internet connection. This daily sweet rice. So that's really devotional service. So that's why this is so exalted, or these understandings are so exalted, or the lover of God, or the friend of God, or the servant of God, much higher than any. Of course, sometimes you will see certain people in different Western religions considering themselves to be the servant a little higher platform by doing, or a lot higher platform by doing that. Whereas this knowledge that we're presenting is the highest platform of approach. Not as God, but as Krishna, as a person. Because if you love God because he's God, that's good. Not the highest. But if you love God because you love God, in other words, that's causeless. That's described in the Bhagavatam, Savai Pum Sampara Dharma. Yato Bhakti Hoksaje, Ahaitakya Pratyata, Yatma Supersedite. That the topmost understanding of Dharma or religion is to approach God or Krishna without any motive. Ahaitakya Pratyata, without any consideration, without any motive. And be unstoppable, completely unstoppable, 24/7 in devotional service. So this is what we're aspiring for in Krishna consciousness. And it's a very high platform. Of course, first understand the greatness of God, and then later on you can love God because you love God. Just like if someone really loves someone in this material world, for example, let's say someone loves their child. Why do you love him? Because I love him. And there's really no answer to the why question. It's not that I love God because he supplies me. I love God because he's great. I love God because he plays the flute great. I love him because I love him. Love is causeless. Real love is causeless. There's no... And that way the love can never be stopped. If the love is dependent on anything, then it is not real love. So I love Krishna because he's Krishna. Because I love him. And he can crush me by his embrace, leave me brokenhearted. Of course, this is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shikshasha, the verse, the last one. He can crush me by his embrace, leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything, and still it will not deter me. I will have the same mood and relationship to him. Hare Krishna. So let's continue. Learned scholars have described the impetuses, and here we're talking about Vibhavas again, for parental love for Krishna existing in the elderly personalities who are in relation with him as follows. That's elderly personalities like me. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because this is not my spiritual body, thank God. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose bodily complexion is just like a bluish, new-grown lotus flower, whose body is very delicate, and whose lotus eyes are surrounded by scattered hair as black as bees, was walking on the streets of Vrindavan when Mother Yashoda, the beloved wife of Nanda Maharaj, saw him. Immediately, the milk began to flow from her breast, soaking her body. Some specific provocations for parental love of Krishna are listed as his blackish bodily hue, which is very attractive and pleasing to see, his all auspicious bodily features, his mildness, his sweet words, his simplicity, his shyness, his humility, his constant readiness to offer respect to the elderly, and his charity. All of these qualities are considered ecstatic provocations for parental love, that is, vibhavas, udipanas, his qualities. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 8th chapter, verse 45, it is stated by Shukadeva Goswami that Mother Yashoda accepted Lord Krishna as her son, although he is accepted in the Vedas as the king of heaven. In the Upanishads, as the impersonal Brahman, he's everything. In philosophy, as the supreme male, by the yogis as the super soul, and by the devotees as the supreme personality of Godhead. Once Mother Yashoda, and when it says by the devotees as the supreme personality of Godhead, it's not referring to the Brajavasis. That is those who are aware that he's the supreme personality of Godhead. But Yashoda Mai is not aware. Krishna does not want her to become aware. Even when she gets bewildered, she looked in his mouth one time, he had eaten dirt, and within his mouth there was all the universes, and even a good sign. Let her forget all these things. Little baby. And that's really high love. The love, internet connection again. Every once in a while you get a little internet connection buggy. Once Mother Yashoda addressed one of her friends in this way, Nanda, Maharaj, the leader of the coward and worship Lord Vishnu along with me. And as a result of this worship, Krishna has been saved from the clutches of Putana and other demons. So she was not attributing Putana's death to Krishna himself. She was attributing it to her faithful worship of Lord Vishnu. It was not different from Krishna. Anyway, the twin Arjun trees were, of course, broken due to a strong wind. Krishna didn't do it. You know, there was a strong wind. Fortunately, the trees didn't hit Krishna. And although Krishna appeared to have lifted Govardhan Hill along with Balaram, I think that Nanda Maharaj actually held the mountain. Otherwise, how could it have been possible for a little boy to lift such a great hill? This is another example of ecstasy and parental love. This kind of parental love is generous. In other words, she's completely convinced that Krishna didn't do any of these things. He's just a little boy, and somehow or other by my prayers, he's being protected. Like Prabhupada talked about a mother's desire to protect the children, her child, utilizing the example of his own mother. He said that his mother would eat with her left hand. She took a vow. I'm going to eat with my left hand until my son notices why I'm doing it differently than everyone else. This is her vow. She thought by taking a particular vow, it was going to protect her son. So many different things that parents do. There's the cudgel thing they do to protect the eyes, to protect the child. Different things. Different things that many of them are superstitious, some of them are tradition, but it's out of love that they're doing this. This kind of parental love is generated in the devotee out of his conviction and love that he himself is superior to Krishna without being taken care of by such a devotee. Krishna could not possibly live. I don't feed him, he's going to starve. Of course, God does not starve. But if you just think of him as your son, you'll think he's going to starve. That's the love. One devotee therefore prayed to the parents of Lord Krishna as follows. Let me take shelter of the elderly parental devotees of Lord Krishna. They are always anxious to serve Krishna and to maintain him, and they are always so kind to him. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto them for being so kind to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the parent of the whole universe. There's a similar statement or similar prayer by a Brahmin who says, let others worship the Vedas and the Upanishads, and let others worship the Mahabharat if they are afraid of material existence and want to become liberated from that condition. But as far as I am concerned, I only wish to worship Maharaj Nanda because the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead Krishna is crawling in his courtyard as his own child. Following is a list of respectable personalities who enjoy parental affection toward Krishna. Now, this is not a complete list. There's unlimited personalities, but these are prominent personalities. One, Mother Yashoda, the queen of Braj. Two, Maharaj Nanda, the king of Braj. Three, Mother Rohini, the mother of Balarama. Four, all the elderly gopis whose sons were taken away by Lord Brahma. Five, Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. Six, the other 15 wives of Vasudeva. Wives. Seven, Kunti, the mother of Arjuna. Eight, Vasudeva, the real father of Krishna, and nine, Sandeep, Pani Muni, Krishna's teacher. All these are considered respectable elderly personalities with parental love for Krishna. This list is an order of superior importance, and thus we can see that Mother Yashoda and Maharaj Nanda are considered to be the supermost of all elderly personalities. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 9th chapter, verse 3, Shukadeva Goswami gives Maharaj Parikshit a description of the form and beauty of Mother Yashoda. He says, my dear king, the wide hips of Mother Yashoda were surrounded by silk and linen clothes, and her breasts were flowing with milk because of her affection. When she was churning butter and tightly holding the rope, the bangles on her hands and the earrings on her ears were moving, and from the nice decoration in her hair, the flowers were slackening and falling down. Due to her excessive labor, there were drops of perspiration on her face. There's another description of Mother Yashoda in a devotee's prayer. Let me be given protection by Mother Yashoda, whose curly hairs are bound with thread, whose hair is very brightly beautified by the vermilion placed on the part, and whose bodily... Her eyes are always engaged in seeing the faces filled with tears. Her complexion, which resembles the bluish lotus flower. Oh, the internet connection again. Just a little unstable. Is enhanced in beauty by her dressing herself with many colorful garments. Let her merciful glance fall on all of us so that we may be protected from the clutches of Maya as smoothly progress in our devotional service. There is the following description of Mother Yashoda's affection for Krishna. After rising early in the morning, Mother Yashoda first of all offered her breast milk to Krishna, and then she began to chant various mantras for his protection. Then she would decorate his forehead very nicely and bind his arms with protective talismans. By all of these activities, it is definitely understood that she is the emblem of all maternal affection for Krishna. So we should follow in her footsteps if we're interested in becoming situated in that particular ras. The description of Nanda Maharaj's bodily features is as follows. The hairs on his head are generally black, but some of them are gray. His garments are of greenish color, like the new grown leaves of a banyan tree. His belly is fatty. His complexion is exactly like the full moon, and he has a beautiful mustache. When Krishna was a baby, one day he was walking in the courtyard, capturing the finger of his father. And because he could not walk steadily, he appeared to be almost falling down. While Nanda Maharaj was giving protection to his transcendental son in this way, all of a sudden, there were drops of tears in his eyes, and he became overwhelmed with joy. Let us all offer our respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of King Nanda. Childhood age, childish dress, movements by the child, sweet words spoken by the child, nice smiling, and various forms of childish play are considered provocations for increasing parental love for Krishna. In other words, the bhavas. The childhood ages of Krishna are divided into three periods: the beginning, Kaumara age, the middle, Kaumara age, and the end of Kaumara age. During the beginning and middle of the Kaumara age, Krishna's thighs are fatty and the inner part of his eyes are whitish. There are signs of teeth coming out, and he is very mild and gentle. He is described as follows. When Krishna had only three or four teeth coming out of his gums, his thighs were fatty, his body was very short, and he began to enhance the parental love of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda with the activities of his childish body. He was sometimes stepping with his legs again and again, sometimes crying, sometimes smiling, sometimes sucking his thumb, and sometimes lying down flat. These are some of the different activities of the child Krishna. When Krishna was lying down flat, sometimes sucking the toes of his feet, sometimes throwing his legs upward, sometimes crying, sometimes smiling, Mother Yashoda, seeing her son in such pastimes, did not show any sign of restricting him, but rather began to watch her child with eagerness, enjoying these childhood pastimes. In the beginning of Krishna's Kaumara age, the nails of tigers were set in a golden necklace about his neck. Tigers. There was protective tilak on his forehead, black mascara, his cudgel, around his eyes, and silk thread around his waist. These are the descriptions of Krishna's dress at the beginning of the Kaumara age. So remember, Krishna doesn't have a material body. I've got to repeat this again. He doesn't have a material body. And when he goes through this Kaumara, Pavanda, Aishwarya age, he is in the same body. It's not growing because the cells are dividing like in our body or... Anyway, whatever the reason is that our body grows or changes, as Krishna says in the Gita, you know, we're going from boyhood to youth and then old age, or girlhood to you, the mental things. Krishna is manifesting these different ages for the pleasure of his devotees and to interact in different types of loving exchanges with his different devotees. That's all. And our undergoing these changes in our body is a perverted reflection, and our body is completely mundane, full of bile, mucus, and hair, and blood, and guts. Krishna doesn't even have veins in his body. He's Ashnavi Ram. It's like if you look at any of our bodies, look at my hand, there's all sorts of veins there. And when you get older, you can see the veins more clearly, see? Very nice. So when Nanda Maharaj saw the beauty of child Krishna with tiger nails on the mal tree, beautifully decorated thread and silk clothes tied around his waist. Internet connection again. When Nanda Maharaj saw his child like this, he never became satiated by the child's beauty. Satiated means, well, I've seen enough, I'm full. Like you eat, you become satiated. Don't want any more. You know, let's do something else here. But Nanda Maharaj never felt bored. When you're satiated, you're either bored with something or you don't even want to hear about it anymore because, you know, it's enough. Been there, seen it, done it. In the middle Kumara age, now we get in the middle of the Kumara age, the upper portion of Krishna's hair falls around his eyes. Sometimes he's covered with cloth around the lower part of his body, and sometimes he is completely naked. Sometimes he tries to walk, taking step by step, and sometimes he talks very sweetly in broken age. So these are the three divisions up to 5 years of age, okay? These are some of the symptoms of his middle Kumara age. He is thus described when Mother Yashoda once saw him in his middle Kumara age. His scattered hairs were touching his eyebrows, and his eyes were restless, but he could not express his feelings with proper words still. When he was talking, his talk was so nice and sweet to hear. When Mother Yashoda looked at his little ears and saw him naked trying to run very quickly with his little legs, she was merged into the ocean of nectar. Krishna's ornaments at this age are a pearl hanging from the septum of his nose, or the middle portion of the nose, butter on his lotus-like palms, and some small bells hanging from his waist. It is stated that when Mother Yashoda saw that the child was moving, ringing bells on his waist, smiling at her with a pearl between his nostrils and with butter on his hands, she became wonderfully pleased to see her little child in that fashion. While Krishna was in the middle of his Kumara age, his waist became thinner, his chest became broader, and his head was decorated with his curly hairs resembling the falling of the wings of a crow. These wonderful features of Krishna's body never failed to astonish Mother Yashoda. At the end of his Kumara age, Krishna carried a small stick in his hand, his clothing was a little longer, and he had a knot around his waist resembling the hood of a snake. Wow. In other words, the final third portion of his Kumara age. In that dress, he used to take care of the calves near the house, and sometimes he played with the cowherd boys of about the same age. He had a slender flute and a buffalo horn bugle, and sometimes he played on a flute made from the leaves of trees. These are some of the symptoms of the end of Krishna's Kumara age. When Krishna was a little grown up and was taking care of the small calves, he would often go near the forest. And when he was a little bit late returning home, Nanda Maharaj would immediately get up on the Chandra Shalika, a small shed built on the roof for getting a bird's eye view of all around, and he would watch for him, worrying about the late arrival of his little son. Nanda Maharaj would remain on the Chandra Shalika until he could indicate to his wife that Krishna, surrounded by his little cowherd friends, was coming back with the calves. Nanda Maharaj would point out the peacock feather on his child's head and would inform his beloved wife how the child was pleasing to his eyes. Mother Yashoda would then address Nanda Maharaj. See my dear son whose eyes are white, who has a turban on his head, a wrapper on his body, and leg bells which tinkle very sweetly on his feet. He is coming near, along with the Surabhi calves, and just see how he is wandering upon the sacred land of Vrindavan. Similarly, Maharaj Nanda would address his wife. My dear Yashoda, just look at your offspring Krishna. See his blackish bodily luster, his eye is tinged with red color, his broad chest and his nice golden necklace. How wonderful he looks, and how he is increasing my transcendental bliss more and more. When Krishna, the beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, steps into his Kaishora age, although he becomes more beautiful, his parents still consider him to be in the Puganda age, even though he's between the ages of 10 and 15. Remember, there's three ages, Kumara, Puganda, and Kaishora. And Puganda is between, is actually up to the end of the 15th year. I mean, Puganda's, yeah. Puganda is actually 5 to 10, sorry. Got it wrong. And the Kaishora is 10 to 15, the end of the 15th year. When Krishna is in his Puganda age, some of his servants also accept him as being in the Kaishora age. When Krishna performs his childhood pastimes, his general practice is to break the milk and yogurt pots, throw the yogurt in the courtyard, and steal the cream from the milk. Sometimes he breaks the churning rod, and sometimes he throws butter on the fire. In this way, he increases the transcendental pleasure of his mother, Yashoda. Let's see how much more we have to read in this particular chapter. Just want to see if we can be able to finish. Whoops. I don't know. No, actually, we won't finish it today. In this connection, Mother Yashoda once told Mukara, her maidservant, that's Radharani's grandmother, actually, just look at Krishna, looking stealthily toward all sides and slowly stepping forward from the bushes. It appears that he is coming just to steal the butter. Don't expose yourself, or you may understand that we are looking toward him. I want to enjoy the sight of his eyebrows moving in this cunning way. And I want to see his fearful eyes and beautiful face. In enjoying Krishna's attitude of stealing butter very stealthily, Mother Yashoda experienced the ecstasy of maternal love by smelling his head, sometimes patting his body with her hand, sometimes offering blessings, sometimes ordering him, sometimes gazing at him, sometimes maintaining him, and sometimes giving him good instructions not to become a thief. Such activities are in maternal ecstatic love. An important point to be observed in this connection is that the childish propensity of stealing is there even in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore this propensity is not artificial. However, in the spiritual relationship, there is no inebriety. In other words, it's good to the stealing propensity as there is in the material world. In the material world, it is bad. Let's see. Let's do one more paragraph here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 13th chapter, verse 33, Shukadeva Goswami tells King Pariksit, my dear king, as soon as the elderly gopis, those in parental affection, saw their sons coming, there was an inexpressible sign of parental love, and all of them became absorbed in affection. At first, they were planning to chastise their sons for stealing butter, but as soon as the sons came before their eyes, they lost all of their angry attitudes and became overwhelmed with affection. They began to embrace their sons and smell their heads. While doing this, they almost became mad after their children. In their childhood pastimes, all these coward boys joined with Krishna in stealing butter. But rather than becoming angry, Mother Yashoda became wet from the milk flowing out of her breasts. Out of her affection for Krishna, she began to smell his head repeatedly. Very beautiful. Okay, so we're going to end here. And we're going to take some questions about this wonderful portion, the Nectar Devotion, dealing with parental affection. So we're going to be allowed to unmute ourselves. Okay, who has a question about parental affection? Nobody has a question. All right, this is your opportunity. Everybody's shy tonight. Okay, going once.
I have a question about Sakya.
Sanlila, you have a question.
Chumbaka was asking something. She can go first.
I can't hear anything right now.
Can you hear me?
Chumbaka Lata, you have a question.
Can you hear me, Gurudev?
Well, I can't hear you. Wait a second. I think that's my fault. I have so many faults. So give me 1 second. Yes, that is my fault. Okay, I think Brajalila had a question first. I can hear now. No?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Yeah, I hear you. You're in the airport.
Please send my obeisances.
Send my blessings.
Yeah. So I was wondering with the different ages of Krishna in this pastime, does he grow up through those, for the maternal, or does he just stay a baby because that's how Mother Yashoda, I don't know, do some people prefer him as a baby and that parental affection, or and so he stays that way, or does he grow up, or are there different simultaneous times when he's a baby and he's also in the middle age, or it's kind of confusing the question.
That's a good question. In the pastimes in the earth, he grows up, goes through the different ages at different times. There's actually a sequence that he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and Yashodamayi enjoys him at different ages in different ways. Like when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then she's experiencing great separation from Krishna. In the spiritual world, 15 years of age. So only in the material realm does Krishna have this, when he appears in the material realm, does Krishna have this pastime of growing older like that? So there's some specific pastimes of Krishna that only occur in the material realm and don't, when Krishna appears in the material realm, and don't appear in the spiritual world.
You cut out at one point. Do you say he's always 15 in the spiritual world or something like that?
In the spiritual world, he's always about 16.
So the baby pastimes are just material world.
They're when he's within the material. They're not material, but there's certain pastimes of Krishna that are only manifest in the material world. Other things.
In the boarding area.
The killing of demons. The killing of demons is only manifest in the material world. There's no killing in the spiritual world. So there's certain pastimes. And Krishna in the spiritual world is always 16 and always engaged with the gopis in the spiritual world. In the material world, when Krishna manifests his pastimes, when he's first born, there's some indication. Yes, sometimes he does manifest himself as older just for a few moments to show that he's actually eternally 16. But generally, as a 2-year-old kid, he's not dancing with the gopis at that particular point. So the perfection of Krishna's pastimes is the interactions with the gopis. Okay? Yep. I'm actually envious of you. You're in an airport. I wish I was in an airport. I'm feeling separation from airports.
It's kind of loud.
Yeah, it's very loud. And a lot of people, I'm sure a lot of people are traveling now in spite of the COVID virus, right? That means that there will be an explosion of people with the virus within the next 2 weeks. So you'll be back here soon, and you'll be under confinement, lock and key. We got an oxygen tank for you here, too. So, all right, on that happy note. Chumbaka, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Gurudev. I was wondering if you had any insight about Prabhupada's statement that Sakya Rasa, the fraternal rasa, is similar to conjugal.
Yeah, I do have some insight about that. I was thinking when Prabhupada said that, because there's also teasing and joking in the Sakya Rasa. You know, and hiding from Krishna, getting angry with Krishna, and things very, very similar. I mean, not of course, actual conjugal rasa. I just got a funny message from someone. But not actually conjugal rasa, like you have, you know, kissing and everything like that. But, you know, there's embracing and joking and hiding and getting angry with each other and competing and all these different manifestations you'll find in conjugal rasa. And you don't really find all of them in the parental relationship. And Krishna and the gopis, they're friends too. And Yashoda Mai and Krishna, I mean, you can't say they're like buddies, but Krishna and the gopis, they're friends. They play like friends in a very intimate way. Whereas Krishna and Yashoda Mai and those in the parental relationship, Krishna is actually looking up to them. Krishna doesn't, I mean, at least with the friends who were, you know, the intimate and most confidential friends, it's not that Krishna is looking up to them. Krishna is just like, basically, you know, patting them on the back, running with them and everything like that. And it's a very similar manifestation to conjugal love with the gopis, which you don't find those particular aspects in the relationship with Yashoda Mai. There's a different flavor to it. It's not really one of equality and joking so much, although there is some joking, but you know, it's not like Krishna's pretty respectful of his mother. He's scared of his mother. I mean, he's crying because of his mother. Mother is chasing him to tie him up. And of course you do have you may have similar presence with the gopis, where the gopis tie up Krishna and the coward boys, that Dhananibarjuna Kund story. That's there too. Interactions that Krishna has with the interactions. In many, many ways, it's most similar. Like you have one of equality there. Buddies. Okay, does that answer the question? Okay,
yes,
so
thank you.
Who else has a question? Wow, everybody's gotten so shy recently.
I have a question, Gurudev.
Yeah.
Please accept my humble obeisance.
I accept my blessings. So, good to see you.
Gurudev, you mentioned about something about Satnarayan, you know, puja they do.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, because I think in our school, people from Fiji, they're still initiated and they still do Satnarayan puja. And some of the devotees who have taken second initiation and they do, you know, they've become a priest and they go to people's houses and they do this kind of puja. I don't think so it should be done.
I don't think so either. It's like this: if you're a Brahmin, you shouldn't be making money by your Brahminical activities. Do it. Like, actually, this is very interesting. This in the Jiva Dharma. There's this devotee. Oh yeah, Brajanath. And he is talking to his guru, and he's telling his guru that. He said, I'm giving Bhagavatam classes. That's how I maintain my family. And his guru says, no. Mm-hmm. Not maintain your family by giving, you know, preaching the Bhagavatam. That's contaminated. He said, maintain your family by some innocent thing, some other activity that's not related with your spiritual activities. Because when you maintain your family or make money with spiritual activities, it actually contaminates the spiritual activities. Because you're not able to be equipoised at that particular point. You know, you'll do something that you know is not good just to make money because, I mean, just like Satyanarayan Katha, it's a money-making thing. You know, it's obviously, you know, if I was going to do a Satyanarayan Katha, I would charge some money for it. As soon as a Brahmin starts with a price list, also that actually contaminates everything. Mm. If a Brahmin says, I will do even a bona fide ceremony, even if a Brahmin says, I'm going to do some samskara, namakarana for your little baby, but it's going to cost you $50, then that contaminates everything. I mean, if someone gives a donation to the Brahmin and he uses it in Krishna service, it's a different thing. But if he's charging money or has a price list, that's very bad. And so if his motivation, let's get down to it. If a Brahmana's motivation for doing his spiritual activities is to make money, that's polluted. That's very polluted. A Brahmana should always speak the truth. Satya Priya Hitam. So if a Brahmana is encouraging people to worship Narayan for material things, that's not really the truth.
What about weddings and stuff like that, Gurudev? If they do weddings and you give Brahmins, but they still say that this is what the price is.
I do weddings too, but I don't charge for them. I do weddings because I want people to be married and stable in Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada said, sannyasis generally don't do weddings, but sometimes a spiritual master will do weddings for his disciples to encourage them to be steady according to their psychophysical nature and executing Krishna consciousness. But if he's charging for it, I mean, a temple could charge for it, yes. That's a different thing because it has facilities.
Mm.
You know, that's a way a temple can maintain itself. You say, well, you can rent the temple hall and we'll provide prasadam for, you know, $20 a plate or something like that. I mean, that's fine. But if a Brahmin says that I'm going to do your marriage and you're going to have to pay me $500 for it, that's actually contaminates. A Brahmin should be doing, dependent on charity. If people give charity, that's all right.
Yeah, when I did my daughter's wedding in North Sydney, our temple, I paid for food and all that. But I used a different Brahmin who was from Narayan Maharaj Sampradaya, like, so he was, I think he was, they charged. Because there was, didn't have a priest there.
If a priest is charging, then it ruins your marriage. But it actually, he loses his potency if he's.
Yeah.
It's just like an exchange of money.
Yeah, when my sister got married, someone did the wedding and she paid, but I think they didn't charge, but Radhashalini just gave it as a donation. Yeah.
Well, that's fine. That's a reciprocation, you know, Dharati Pradigranati Huyamakyati Prichati. But, if a Brahmin takes a salary, especially for Brahminical activities, then he loses his Brahminical status at that point. It's just not, you just don't take salaries for doing something. Like if I was to take a salary for giving this class tonight.
Now, because I always argue with the Brahmins, you know, when they do this, even in Fiji, I had a couple of arguments with them, but then I just like walked away because I thought these people are not worth it.
Yeah, don't pay. But if the temple wants to charge for the facilities, I mean, that's normal. That's normal.
Because I think they should just take 25 cents as the... You know, it just says that they should just take 25 cents as a donation. That's all.
Who? The Brahmin or the temple?
No, my grandfather used to say, just give 25 cents as a donation to the Brahmin. That's all they should get.
No, but actually you should reciprocate that. But that's not good either. If you just give them 25 cents, That's like a slap in the face. You should give them something out of appreciation. But there shouldn't be a charge. I mean, there's a matter of etiquette. You know, if I were to do a whole sacrifice and someone say, oh, here's 25 cents.
Now, because you know how in Fiji they give like all these grains and everything, and he said, just put 25 cents. That's all that you get. Give it to them.
Nah, 25 cents. If someone were to give me 25 cents after a sacrifice, I give it back to them and say, I would say, you need this more than me. You know, take it for your wife and family. You know, that's an insult. Someone should reciprocate accordingly, but a Brahmin can't demand anything. All right. I think we should end now. It's nice to see everybody. And we have a few more days left to Kartik. And tomorrow we'll continue with the Nectar of Devotion. Okay, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hari Bol.